You're listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. I had a day off Friday because the studio was closed. We had a special event that most of the journalism students on the Richland Chronicle go to. There's a competition across the state, and they went to it. I did not hear the results yet, but when I do, I'll give you some additional information. But all student media department was closed, as well as the TV and radio studio. So we didn't have a show. So I was lucky. I had some business to take care of, and I'm glad I had that holiday, because it was important that I address this, and it has been addressed. Now, Dallas has been in the news, but if you're a local Dallas Cowboy fan, the Dallas Cowboys won a big game Sunday. Now, I'm not a sports fan. I need to qualify that. When I was younger, I definitely liked to play sports. Probably basketball was my favorite, but also baseball. And later, after I got out of the Air Force, I picked up skiing. I like to ski, but I really haven't had the time to do it recently. So those are the sports that I'm really interested in, but I'm not really like to watch sports. It's just when I was a kid, I was a rabid Brooklyn Dodgers fan. Being born in Brooklyn, most people from Brooklyn were Brooklyn Dodgers fans, but something happened. They moved. They moved to Los Angeles. So I didn't even know where Los Angeles was, but I was mad because you're a fan. I collect baseball cards and had all the Brooklyn Dodgers team. I could probably tell you the lineup, but I'm not going to do that because most of the people are dead. And that's common. When you're growing up, a young person, especially if you stay in one city, you become a fan if you're fortunate enough to have a team based in your city. And Dallas is very fortunate in that regard. They have both a baseball team, hockey team, basketball team, and football team. Something else happened. When I went to grad school, I still was interested in sports, and I became a fan of the Oakland Raiders, a big fan of the Oakland Raiders. And guess what happened? Yes, you got it right. They moved to Los Angeles. Now I knew where Los Angeles was because I was living in California, Berkeley, California at the time, and I was not happy about that. And at that point, I said, never again. I realized then that sports is a business, and if it makes business sense to move the team, the owners have the right, because it is their team, to move them, and they'll do that. So what happens is most people that are sports fans have strong loyalty to the team that they're following, and they get really upset when they're moved. And I was upset, but I said, never again. I'm not going to invest my time, energy on any sports team, and I was in several states. But there was a funny situation. After I left the Air Force, I moved to Fort Worth, Texas, and worked at then General Dynamics. I was a senior contract administrator on the F-16 International program. But the first year I was there, guess who was in the Super Bowl? You got it. The Oakland Raiders and the Dallas Cowboys. Now, literally, almost everybody at that Fort Worth plant, it was an Air Force plant that General Dynamics Fort Worth Division rented from them, the Air Force, were Dallas Cowboy fans. Even though there is a rivalry between Fort Worth and Dallas, the Dallas Cowboys were the Dallas-Fort Worth area's team. And at the time, they were called America's team. I don't think a lot of other cities appreciated that, but I was still a loyal Oakland Raiders fan. I was rooting for the Raiders at least for that game. I stopped following the team, but at least for that game. And they won that year. And there were a lot of disappointed Dallas Cowboy fans in that plant. And I didn't spread the word, but a few people knew I was an Oakland Raider fan because I had an Oakland Raider mug that I drank my coffee out of. Now, the beginning of the year was interesting. I was listening to some of the people in the newsrooms that are Dallas Cowboy fans, and most of them didn't expect anything from the Cowboys. They have given up on the Dallas Cowboys. And if you're a follower of the Dallas Cowboys, you know better than I, because I really don't follow them. But I tell you what drives me nuts. If you're in Dallas, they won a big game, and literally all the talk shows, that's what they were talking about. That was one of two topics that we were talking about. The Dallas Cowboys are 5-1, and they're going to the Super Bowl. Well, let's see. They're having a terrific start. I wish them well, but things seem to happen with the Dallas Cowboys. At one time, they were on a winning streak, but the coach and the owner had some words, really had some differences, and after he left, the Cowboys really haven't done that much. So I wish them well. I wish the fans here well. But I don't invest any time or energy in watching sports. I have other things to do that I consider more important. With that said, I've broken my rule. I normally never talk about sports deliberately. There are certain subjects I just don't talk about. The two major ones are sports, and the reason is if you're interested in sports, there are plenty of talk radio shows that you can listen to that are dedicated to nothing but sports. But I noticed that several talk show hosts that primarily talk current events, politics, economics, some on the culture, that if they're still sports fans, they cannot stop talking about sports. It drives me crazy because, like I said, if you're really interested in sports, there are several places to go to get commentary or what's going on. But there seems to be a strong desire of the especially the local Dallas talk show host. And since most of you are not in Dallas, many of you are, but many of you are not. I'm not going to mention any names, but they will talk about the Dallas Cowboys on and on and on, and I just wish they would go with their normal fare, if you will, of what they normally talk about, what's in the news. And that's what I'm going to do, because the second story that broke Sunday was the fact that we now have the first case of Ebola, I almost said it again, it's Ebola, not Ebola, Ebola, in a nurse that was assisting with the care of Thomas E. Duncan, who died, came to the United States and died, I believe it was the 8th of October. But she was one of many people, medical staff, as well as doctors, nurses, that were caring for this individual. And she had the protective clothing, the gloves, the shield or face mask. She was following what she thought was the correct protocol. Procedures, that protocol is just, here's how you should treat the patient, and they're detailed instructions. Now, I wish this nurse well. She has come down with it. This is a confirmed case. There's no doubt she has it, and it's a very deadly disease. The strain of Ebola virus that this gentleman had, remember he came from West Africa, namely Liberia, the death rate, although it'll vary from location to location, is about 70%. The more general figure that you'll hear in the news is between 50 and 90%, but it depends on the strain. The Ebola Zaire was 90%. Very few people that got it lived. And many health workers, unfortunately, got it and died. And before they died, though, they didn't know they had it. First, they didn't even know what they were dealing with, and they spread the disease. Well, now we know what we're dealing with, and even though this lady, this nurse, was following the protocol that she was told would keep her safe and knew the dangers of treating and comforting Mr. Duncan, who had Ebola, she has now come up with a diagnosis of being infected with the Ebola virus. My prayers are with her, and I ask you, whenever you pray, to say a prayer for her, because The Ebola virus is not a pleasant way to die. Initially, during what's called the incubation period, and that varies from anywhere from 2 to 3 days, upwards of 21, and more or less most people become infected around the 10-day. I mean, most people, the average incubation period is around 10 days. So you have some variability. And what do I mean by incubation period? That's from the start of the incubation period is when you become infected. And for a period of time during the incubation period, you have symptoms, but the symptoms are, for all practical purposes, identical to having a common cold. In other words, you have a fever, you have the chills, you have coughing, sneezing, you have a headache, a rather severe headache, you have fatigue, weakness in the body. Those are the early symptoms during the incubation period that any Ebola patient goes through. And they're not pleasant in and of themselves, but they're not deadly. Meanwhile, what's happening during that incubation period, the virus is multiplying all over your body. The virus is literally attacking the cells in the body because they want to replicate and they need food, and your body is the food, and they're replicating. They're multiplying. And we're talking billions of billions of billions of viruses because they're very, 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 very tiny, folks. The only way we even know what they look like, you need an electronic microscope with heavy magnification to see what they look like. And they're hard to distinguish because they're different types of viruses. But they know what they look like, and based on, I believe they took a sample of her blood, and they know it's in her blood, and that's what happens. It goes into your blood. Now, I do have, and I need to say this for those that are new to the show, the way you listen to this show is go to the pronkpops.wordpress.com. website, companion website for this show, and at the very top you'll have links to the most recent shows, and that's usually the last 60 to 80 shows. And at the very bottom of the page you'll have links to my entire portfolio of the Pronk Pop show, except for some early shows that unfortunately we've lost because they were overwritten. But most of my shows are there. By the end of the year, I'm trying to hit 400. That's going to be a little touchy, but that's my goal. And by June of next year, my 500th show. And hopefully sometime between now and then, I get a gig in commercial radio. That's my goal or career objective. Current career objective is to get a nationally syndicated talk show, which is difficult to do. I'm looking for my break, if you will. I think I have my own style, and I really am not doing everything I could. I really enjoy interviewing people. A lot of people just don't like interviewing people, including Rush Limbaugh, and I understand that, because every area of communication, there are people that specialize, and interviews are somewhat of a specialty. You got to be prepared. And the problem with interviews, sometimes you get people that are simply boring. You can be prepared, ask the questions, and they're just not very articulate. But I really do enjoy, I've done a few interviews and I really enjoy doing that, but we're really not equipped. I simply don't have the time. I don't have a producer to arrange the interviews. So it's very much, if an opportunity presents itself, and there several have, I've jumped at it, and they usually turn out very well, if I do say so myself. But that is the exception, not the rule. I wish I could talk to other people, and I also wish we could have call-ins, but we're simply not equipped at, because we're not a small college. We have over 20,000 students going to Richland College. It's a community college. It's probably the leading community college in the state of Texas, though, and it has a rather diverse student body, a very international student body, but we're not equipped to take calls from either students, staff, or other listeners because we simply don't have a large enough audience. We're not a commercial radio station in the sense of going over the airwaves. We're strictly over the internet. This is right now being streamed over the internet. But what I do is I record the show and then post it later this evening. But hopefully by 10 o'clock, this show will be posted. My Monday and Wednesday is a rather tight schedule because I have a prior commitment right after the show. So I have to stop the show really at 5. Sometimes I go a little after 5, but I really have to wrap it up around 5 o'clock and really have to do a little post-production. I try to really tighten up the time that I spend on the story. That's a little bit too much. of inside baseball. But the point I'm trying to make is this. You have to remember you have doctors, nurses, and other people in the hospital that every day are risking their lives. And it's not just the Ebola. People come to the hospital that are sick, and some come with contagious diseases. Now, they all of them undergo a lot of training, and they try to avoid becoming infectious and catching the disease, taking the necessary precautions, but they're as good as those protocols or procedures are. Now, I'm leading up to something, and this is really becoming more and more aggravating, isn't the right word, very concerned about, and that's being diplomatic. I'm really mad about this. Now, what am I mad about? Prior to this outbreak, for example, if you wanted to do research on the Ebola virus, as well as any, there's a family of viruses that Ebola is part of, you had to do your research in what is called a biosafety level 4 lab. Now, most of you probably don't know what a biosafety level 4 lab is. And why would you need to do it? Because the Center for Disease Control, as well as the World Health Organization, as well as people that specialize in viruses, all know how deadly this virus is. Because after the cold symptoms that you get, splitting headaches, sneezing, initially you think you got a very bad case of the flu. But you haven't seen anything yet if you happen to unfortunately have the Ebola virus infection, because you bleed out. You bleed to death because this virus attacks all your organs, including your brain, your heart, your kidney, your spleen, your liver, as well as the cells of your body. And as a result, you get clots throughout your body and you also bleed to death. It's an agonizing death. And what happens is you'll be bleeding from all the orifices of your body. Your eyes, your ears, your nose, your mouth, your anus, all will be bleeding. You will be vomiting your insides, such as the stomach lining, out. You will have a severe case of diarrhea. Literally, your insides, either through vomit or diarrhea, are leaving your body. That's how agonizing it is. That's how painful it is. It is not an easy death. I don't wish this virus on anybody. Who would? And that's why many people in West Africa are panicking, because the death toll right now is 4,000 and rising rapidly. Yes, 4,000, over 4,000. There are over 8,000 confirmed cases, and that really understates it. They're probably over 10,000. And I'm talking primarily in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, and a few cases in Nigeria. Ladies and gentlemen, this is spreading throughout Africa, and that's why many of the African nations have closed their borders. They will not permit anyone from these countries to enter their country. Now, you have to understand, many of these governments are highly corrupt and run by tyrants, dictators. They'll have different titles, so they can do that. And they will use their military to make sure their borders are closed. They don't want this disease in their country. The only hope that the people of West Africa have in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea is from the so-called developed or Western nations of Europe and the United States, because these are very poor countries with very low standards of living, where people earn a dollar a day if they're lucky, where you have massive unemployment. And this spread of the Ebola virus is damaging their economies, because what's happening, Western countries are pulling out their staffs. They don't want their staffs to their employees to catch it, so they're pulling out. So their economies already, and literally towards the bottom of all the nations, is plummeting. So you got to think about the economic consequences, because it does damage the standard of living, even though this is very low, of the countries. But it's spreading, and you have fear and panic, especially in West Africa. And they should be fearful of it. That said, the United States, although slow to react, is sending our military over there to build really clinics and teach the people of these countries how to deal with it in terms of what clothing or suits to wear, boots, shields. But what's the problem? What's being not said? The doctors, they're not many, first of all, in terms of the population of these countries. There are not many doctors over there, and many of them are dying of the Ebola virus. So are the nurses. So are any of the healthcare workers. Because if you're treating people that have it, you run a very high risk of catching it, even if you follow all the precautions. In other words, you decontaminate yourself when you leave the area, which usually involves bleach being spread over your outer garments, and there are procedures and how to take your gloves off, how to take your goggles off. And they're trying their best under really terrible conditions to both treat and but not catch it. But they're still catching it. And there are people, doctors, that have been trained. So the protocol, there's something not working. And we're seeing this in Dallas, Texas, in Presbyterian Hospital. I'm literally less than 5 miles away from Presbyterian, probably closer to 3.5. I passed the hospital. When did I go? Let's see. It was Saturday night. I didn't go to the hospital. I had to go someplace else. I was shopping for something. And I used to live about a mile from it. I don't live that close anymore. But I was aware of where that apartment complex was that Thomas Duncan lived temporarily, because I used to walk the neighborhood trying to keep fit. And I walked the area and passed literally dozens of apartment complexes. So it's very, very close to Presbyterian. And Presbyterian is a very large, highly professional. It's a terrific hospital complex. It's very, very large. I hope you've seen some of the videos. And they do an excellent job. But they're not used to treating. This is their first case of Ebola. And there are a lot of lessons that are going to be learned. But you need to be honest, I think, first of all, with the people that are going to provide the care for anybody that is diagnosed, a confirmed diagnosis. In other words, they're tested and they do have Ebola in their blood. If that's the case, you have to follow a rather strict protocol. But what's being left out and what's not really being said? It's being talked about. Let me just tell you this. It's all over the internet if you look. The Center for Disease Control will tell you the only way you can get this disease if you have direct contact with the blood, vomit, diarrhea, the body fluids of an Ebola patient. One of the symptoms is coughing and sneezing. And when you cough and sneeze, tiny little droplets are aerosolized and spread in the air. Very, very small. You can't see them. But you've known when you've had a cold. I have hay fever. As a matter of fact, this is the worst time usually for hay fever. And I'm waiting for a cold spell to kill the ragweed. Dallas is known, if you live in Dallas, people have allergies. I have hay fever. Actually, it's not bad. It's much worse on the East Coast. But I do have, usually around this time, I have sneezing, occasionally runny eyes, stuffed up nose. I might get an sinus infection. And I've had a few of those symptoms. I'm not running to the hospital because I know what I need to take, and it's Sudafed. I go to my local grocery store, and I had to buy a box of Sudafed to treat my allergies. But that is a fairly common situation for many, many people that live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, especially Dallas, and they have to go to their doctor. Usually, once they're diagnosed with having an allergy, and it usually recurs, and it's usually different depending on your allergies, different months that it occurs in. For me, it's the fall, primarily September, October, mid-November. But once that killing frost comes in, then it's over with it. And then the only thing I have to worry about is the flu. But if you have an allergy, you know that you sneeze and into the air goes tiny, tiny, tiny droplets. You can't see it, but they're there. That same thing is happening with the Ebola virus. And it's being aerosolized, tiny, tiny droplets. Like I'm sure some of you probably use either deodorant or hairspray and you spray it on. Well, those droplets you usually can see. You know, I like Right Guard, so I spray my, under my arms and I can see the spray. But these are tiny, tiny, tiny droplets. The same thing with a cough. Some of you have children and you probably had a situation where your young child has either a coughing spell or a sneezing spell and you're trying to help them and they sneeze right in your face and before you know it, you have the flu or whatever they have. Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the situation with Ebola. You don't have to literally touch the patient or any of his body fluids. They're in the air. They're in the air. That's why it's spreading. That's one of the ways it's spreading. There are many other ways. For example, in Africa, there are certain traditions of how to bury someone that's died, and usually that involves touching by the family and friends of the body of the person that's died. And that was one way the Ebola virus spread through Africa. Even though the patient had died, they were touching the body. Now they're aware you shouldn't do that, but there was a strong tradition of how you bury your dead, and that was one of the vectors, if you will, or ways that Ebola was spread in Africa. Now, we've learned from that mistakes, and that's something that needs to be said. You have lessons learned. One of the things in the military, you have an event or an accident or something, you have a lessons learned. Okay, what did we do right and what did we do wrong? Now, because of the second case, the Center for Disease Control supposedly is sending a team down to Presbyterian to really review the protocols, the procedures, to first investigate or try to figure out what went wrong. Why did this nurse that was following the protocol get the virus? I don't know. I don't know exactly what she was wearing, although there have been news reports that she had the shield on, which is a face cover. In Africa, they're using goggles, but you can get an entire shield that'll shield your face. So if someone coughs, you don't get the fluids on. But then after you assist the patient, you need to be decontaminated because that outside of that suit, including the shield, invariably you're going to have microscopic, real tiny particles of the virus all over you. So that's why following the protocol is very important. But what if you're missing something? And that's the point I'm trying to make. The Center for Disease Control for a long time has maintained that the only way you can contact the Ebola virus is through direct contact. And they're saying that, they're repeating that over and over and over again, even though people that have done research with Ebola and its spread have a strong suspicion, if not certainty, that it's spread through the air, because there have been research studies where Ebola has spread from pigs to monkeys and back, and from monkeys to other monkeys that are not in direct contact. That's rather strong evidence. Not convincing, but that needs to be examined. Because if all these doctors, medical personnel, following the procedures are still coming down with Ebola and many of them are dying, I think that's rather strong, if not persuasive evidence that Ebola is airborne. You see, that is the hang up with the Centers for Disease Control. They don't want to say that. Now, why don't they want to say that? Because if it's airborne, it's spread in the air. Now, it is in the air. There's no denying Ebola is in the air. But they're trying to make sure that you don't make the connection. It's like getting the common cold. Those viruses are spread. They are airborne. And that's how you get them. That's why there's always a push this time of year to get your flu shot. Those viruses are spread through the air. They're airborne viruses. That's how you get your common cold or flu. Now, the thing you need to know, that viruses over time mutate. They're trying to live. They're trying to evolve. And because you literally have so many of them multiplying in such a rapid manner, there are many mutations, and one of the mutations is the ability to move from one species to another species, and they're looking for ways to make that happen, to jump from one host to the next host, and one way to do that is to be able to spread the virus through the air. And that's happening. But the CDC won't admit that. Now, I know why. They don't want to panic people. They do not want to panic people. But they don't want to tell you the truth either. Now, what's the danger here? And there's a big danger. I contend the only way to properly deal with Ebola is you need to be in a biosafety level 4 hospital bed. In other words, the people that are treating you, the doctors, the nurses, and anyone else, you're entering that facility, that room, and you're wearing what? A spacesuit that has its own oxygen that's self-contained. In other words, you're not breathing the air in that room. That's not what the CDC is telling people. They're really talking out of both sides of their mouth, because several months ago, they put out a notice to the airline pilots and the people in the industry that if you encounter a patient that you suspect have the Ebola virus, is to put a mask over his face, isolate him from the rest of the passengers, because they know that you're in a confined area where the oxygen in an airplane is being recirculated. And if it's spread through droplets and you're in a confined area like that, the Ebola virus is spreading through the cabin. And prior to this entire outbreak, if you wanted to do research in Ebola, where did you have to do it? In a lab that is biosafety level 4 approved. And there are not many of them. There's a handful. And the bottom line is, and this is the dirty little secret, there are only 19 hospital beds in 4 facilities in the United States that are biosafety level 4. 10 of those beds happen to be at the University of Nebraska, where one of the Ebola patients, one of the doctors that got sick in West Africa, was brought to be treated. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States is woefully unprepared to deal with an Ebola epidemic or pandemic, especially if it's true, and I believe it is true, that Ebola is airborne. Now, I didn't say it. There's a limited amount of extent that we know of that it can be spread through the air, and a limited amount of time that it's viable. But because of the so many medical people, as well as other people that really followed the precautions and still got sick, you have to come to the conclusion. Common sense dictates that the only way to treat these patients, the only place to really treat their patients, where the medical staff, including doctors and nurses, can be safe, is in a biosafety level 4 facility. And Presbyterian Hospital, even though it's an outstanding hospital, does not have a biosafety level 4 facility. They're not equipped. And that's for most hospitals. Almost all hospitals in the United States don't have this capability. That is the fear. And that's why they are resisting and quibbling about it, playing semantic games as to whether Ebola is airborne. It is definitely airborne. And they know it. And they're panicking. Because no hospital, with few exceptions, can truly treat Ebola patients in a safe way. They literally have to have a spacesuit on where you have internal pressurized oxygen where it has a positive pressure, and you have to watch out for pinpricks in the suits or tears, because the Ebola virus can and will exploit any weakness such as that. And that's what's really driving me crazy, that our government officials at the Centers for Disease Control are not leveling with the American people. Because people that really do come down with the Ebola virus in the United States should be sent to one of these facilities. There's only 4. The major one is the University of Nebraska. On a previous post, I have a list of those, and I'll probably add that list to this show, the notes to my show. So that's one aspect to it. And tomorrow's show, I'm looking at the time. It's right at 5 o'clock, and I need to be wrapping it up. But there's another dimension to this, and I'm going to get into it in a lot of detail, more detail than I have in the past shows. And that's the fact that the United States, along the United States-Mexican border, have literally hundreds of thousands illegal aliens entering every year. The estimates are roughly about a million plus cross the border. Guess who's crossing the border into the United States illegally? West Africans. They're fleeing their countries. They're flying to the Caribbean and then to Central America. And there's an entire network set up. They're smuggled into the United States. They know they cannot get a visa. They know they cannot legally immigrate. So they're fleeing into the United States, getting out of their country, and if they develop the Ebola virus, they might get care here, as did Thomas E. Duncan. He fortunately had a visa, but most people don't, and they'll try to get here. And what is the fear, the big fear in some of these countries? If it spreads to Central America, which it might very well be, because the West Africans are coming through Central America into Mexico. If we have a pandemic and it breaks out in Central America, the problem of 70 to 100,000 illegal alien children will be minor. In other words, you will have many more people fleeing their country into the United States and literally spreading the disease all over the United States. That's what happens when you don't control your borders and you don't deport illegal aliens. What you're importing is deadly disease. And in tomorrow's show, I'll cover that in more detail. With that, I'll wrap up the show with my closing music, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.